Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us in this great wide world brought together by the internet. The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast are back at their regularly scheduled time. John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. We kind of had to do things a little differently for this episode, seemingly because we are broadcasting, and at the top of the hour, or our hour as we are recording this, the NAIA football playoffs for that first round will be released. Reinhardt, we were at the final regular season game against Union Bulldogs up at Ken White Field in Waleska yesterday. Reinhardt won convincingly 63-0. So we're just waiting to hear where the Eagles are going to wind up in the playoffs, especially for that first round. More than likely, they'll get a road game where that's kind of an issue. We think Lindsey Wilson will probably be the likely destination, but we don't know. You know, these organizations like to throw us curveballs. But we were going to bring that in. So as soon as that gets released, Reinhardt football head coach James Miller will be joining us to talk about what he thinks about where Reinhardt's going and what his team is looking like heading into this playoffs. But that's going to be coming up in about a couple minutes. But right now, we're just going to get into the meat and potatoes of what else is going on here in the world of football in this market. And the Atlanta Falcons came back again. It seems like they have finally exercised the ghost of the Super Bowl. They got up on Carolina 29-3, not quite 28-3, but close enough, and held on and defeated the Panthers. They picked up four interceptions in this one. Kyle Allen just was throwing it more to our secondary than he was to his own receivers. And also, saw this last night, Baylor had a 28-3 lead over Oklahoma and coughed that up. So maybe that 28-3 ghost, as I said, has finally been exercised. So, Daniel, another great performance from the defense. And, boy, this is just an inspired bunch here, playing two NFC South opponents on the road and just dominating in all phases of this of the game.
Right, John. A lot can be said about what we saw today. No problem, man. That they did the same thing to be as the coordinator.
Hey, Daniel, I'm going to stop you right there because your connection, it's going in and out. It's not a very good connection. I'm not sure what the issue is. We may need you to call back and try to get this cleared up. That is not, but we're not having a very good. As I said, you're cutting in and out. You're a little overmodulated. I just can't. You're just not coming through clear.
Okay, can you get me now?
Yeah, we got you now. We got you now. Good.
Okay. Yeah, that was probably my Bluetooth. I had it on the external speaker.
Okay.
That's probably why it was happening. I'm sorry about that, guys.
Oh, no problem.
Sorry about that, folks. Back to the point. I think that we can kind of put this in two different phases. One, if you look at what happened and how Dan Quinn restructured the coaching staff, especially on defense. Remember, this defense struggled the first 7 or 8 weeks of the season.
Right.
And Dan Quinn was calling the defense. He was calling the entire defense, and he realized that he could not do that and coach at the same time. Now he has turned this over to Jeff Obrist and Raheem Morris. Raheem Morris is actually the receivers coach, and he put him back as the defensive back coach, and he's the co-defensive coordinator. He calls the third down call. He makes the calls on third down. Jeff Aldridge makes the call on first and second down. And together, they have put together an unbelievable defensive performance for this Falcons team. Last week, this team came into the game lowest total in sacks, tied for the lowest total in sacks in 7, and they got to Drew Brees 6 times. They were able to sack him 6 times. Today, they had a season low in turnovers with only 4. Today, they forced 4 turnovers. Like, it's a different atmosphere. This team looks like the team that it should have been from start to finish. Matt Ryan looks sharp on offense. He was making the throws that you needed to make, and the defense was taking the tackles. Christian McCaffrey really couldn't get nothing going today. It was unbelievable on how they really shot them. And then those turnovers, guys, 2 of those for sure was in the red zone. So it's like, man,
And the Falcons, what, they haven't given up a touchdown in two straight games, am I right? I mean, they've got nothing but field goals.
Yeah, that's correct. That is correct. They've only given up field goals. And since that bye week, John and Leon, they have turned this thing around. And it's funny. I don't know. I mean, I know it's just two games, but these are two games against your divisional rivals. These are two games against two teams that are fighting for, you know, positions in playoffs, or they're fighting for playoff positions. This loss hurt Carolina probably more than the loss hurt the Saints last week. But this will hurt Carolina because now they're back to 500, and now they're looking up. And with Minnesota winning today, that just knocks them back down further. As far as Atlanta goes, I mean, guys, if I'm looking at the schedule right now and just based off of everything, their only toughest opponent is at San Francisco. So Atlanta can even at 500 if they play as well as they play, if they keep the consistency going.
Exactly. We made that point last week that the game with the Niners is their hardest foe the rest of the way. I mean, next week is home finally against Carolina team that got, I'm sorry, Tampa Bay. As Tampa Bay team that got strafed by New Orleans a little earlier today, as Jameis Winston, his troubles continue. And it looks like Jameis Winston is on his way to playing himself out of Tampa Bay in this regard. So, Leon, you watched. I'm sure you watched some of this game between the Falcons and the Falcons and the Panthers. What were your impressions?
Desmond Trufant. This gentleman right here, you know, we haven't heard from Desmond in quite some time. And, you know, when looking at the Falcons overall, it's kind of like that the guy who overslept and kind of came back and kind of came to work in the middle of the day. I guess, you know, he just hit the snooze button one too many times. But when they wake up, bam, he's at work, he's firing all cylinders. And we're looking at a team that went up until they played San Francisco, can go on a four-game winning streak and be red hot facing what looks to be the number one seeded San Francisco 49ers. It can possibly squeeze off a W.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about a Falcons team that if they get hot enough, they're not going to be playing the role of spoiler. They're going to be jockeying for a wild card position. I mean, this could potentially be a very storied season for the Falcons if everything looks to be going the way it looks. Because they looked like they were playing against an inferior team that they were just punching on. I mean, it's just the Carolina Panthers looked lost today.
Yeah, that they did. That they sure did. And again, with that game with Tampa Bay coming up. I'm sorry, I did it again. No, Tampa Bay coming up at the Benz next week. That would be a nice little run for them. 4-7 again. They got Jacksonville at home, then San Francisco, and then the rest of the division in terms of a clean sweep. Two games here, one game over at Carolina. But my question is, guys, say the Falcons do go 8-8. Does Dan Quinn come back?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he has to.
Yeah,
I think he does. I think this team is rallying around him. I think that's another thing that you see. And actually, the next three home games are all divisional opponents. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting thing. It's going to be something that's going to be, well said. But I think this could possibly save Quinn's job. I don't think he goes anywhere if they can finish 8-8.
Yeah, I think 8-8, he has to come back. And if as long as the defense is performing this way, you said yourself, Daniel, they are performing for him. And again, I think there's just he's got to come back at this point. And I want to apologize to everyone because we're getting a lot of static on Daniel's line. We're trying to find a way to at least alleviate that. It's kind of coming and going, so we'll try to stick with it as long as possible. Again, Daniel calling in on our extra line as we get closer to the NAIA releasing their playoff predictions. It has just started right now, and of course we'll be having that on for you a little bit. In the meantime, we are the last three guys to do a podcast: John Morgo, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton. We're just kind of killing time at this point, waiting for the Reinhardt realizing where Reinhardt is going. And, of course, head coach James Miller of the Eagles will be joining us as soon as that bracket is revealed. Another big thing that happened in the NFL was on Thursday night, that game between the Steelers and the Browns, where Myles Garrett swung the helmet of Mason Rudolph like a loaded weapon, knocking him. Didn't really knock him silly. He kind of stayed with it, but boy, Myles Garrett gets indefinitely suspended. That means he cannot come back until Roger Goodell says it's okay for him to come back. He's out for at least the end of all this year. Even if the Browns do make the playoffs, he is suspended. And Leon, as we were driving up to Waleski yesterday, the three of us were talking about this, and we were saying that in 2 weeks when those teams return, do the return leg in Pittsburgh, this is going to be like WWE SmackDown. And that's pretty much what it's going to be like in terms of everything like that. But Leon, the thing that I thought was interesting is just how unnecessary that whole thing was.
Yeah, that right there was a taking it to the – I mean, unnecessary is understatement, John.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like – there's like 8 seconds left in the game. The game is all but over. Mm-hmm. It's really time to pretty much shake hands and return to the locker room and regroup and get ready for next week. And, before you know it, Bedlam just erupts.
Right.
And, I was hearing rumbles of, Miles, it's Mason Rudolph should file a charge against Myles Garrett and things of that nature. I wouldn't take it that far.
No, I don't think so either.
But at the same time, Myles Garrett needs to do some type of soul searching. At the end of the day, you are at work. I understand that, on the football field, your adrenaline is pumping at an all-time level. Levels that we can only imagine.
Right.
It's easy for us to judge from the outside looking in. But what you have to think about is that, your reputation means a lot. Mm-hmm. And this is not the only year that you'll be playing in the national football. He's not on the brink of retirement.
No, he's a rookie.
He's a rookie.
Yeah, first year.
And you is your first year playing in your rookie contract.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're talking about a young man that if he's not – I don't think he's leading his team in sacks. But he's in line to receive a pretty decent payday when he is eligible. And they will use this against him. Like, hey, you're a bit of a loose cannon. I would understand this is football. But at the same time, though, you have to have – it has to be controlled fire.
Right.
So I want to see Myles Garrett next year come back, a better man after this. His paycheck will be – his pockets will also be a lot lighter.
Right.
So – yeah, that's my take on that. I don't want to get into the finger wag because, we see this. Let's be honest. This was child's play compared to what we see on hockey.
Oh, yes.
We see a lot worse than hockey. Mm-hmm. And there would be no type of year-long suspension in that.
No.
There would be just penalty box.
Yes. Well, they do have a couple of game suspensions sometimes if it's egregious enough.
Right.
Thinking of one Marty McSorley.
Correct.
And sure enough, that is a definite thing you have to concern yourself with, especially on hockey. But hockey is a much different sport. It's a lot faster. It's more constant.
Yeah, it's definitely
the thing.
They're allowed to really blow off steam in hockey. They're allowed to throw punches at one another. The things they get away with in hockey, I don't want to use the B word, barbaric.
Right.
But my goodness, so in football, that's why I don't want to go off and wag the finger too much at Myles Garrett. Mm-hmm. Just come back. Just understand your margins. Understand you cannot do that, what you just did.
Exactly.
Just think, if you're not going to think about the integrity of the game, think about your pockets.
Right.
That's my take on that.
Daniel, I think we got our audio issues from your end fixed up. Do you have any, if you're still there, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I'm here. Right. You guys got me clear.
Okay, clear. We've got a game here, folks. I hate to interrupt. Reinhardt has just announced they are going to play Marion of Indiana. Marion of Indiana will be Reinhardt's opponent in the first round of the NAIA Football Championship. Now, for those of you who don't know about Marion of Indiana, they are very highly ranked. I want to say they were ranked second heading into the last polls. And let's see if I'm right. Yes, they are second in the NAIA. They had a record of 8-0 in this season. So it's going to be the Marion, Indiana will be Reinhardt's opponent in the first round of the NAIA Football Championship. And that is going to be a huge, that is kind of a surprise that Reinhardt would get that one. I'm shocked that we are going to get the number two ranked team in the NAIA, and 9-0 Marion Knights. Very, very interesting here. I mean, that is very shocking to me anyway, because Reinhardt came in 13. You would think it would be either a 16 or a 15 if you're offered up in the first round of the NAIA playoffs. So that is breaking news right here. And, of course, we're going to have James Miller will be calling us in a matter of moments to discuss this. But, guys, going up against the number two seed in the opening round at their place, I got to tell you, I am shocked that the Eagles draw number two.
Well, you know, it's just like with Georgia State, you know, drawing Duke on the first on the first game. You know, it's an opportunity.
Well, yeah.
It's an opportunity. That's what you got to look at it as. Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity to make a huge statement.
Right. Right. So
and this is Billy Hall and company. You know, this is what you practice all year for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is what you beat up on a team 63-0, hanging the 1963. Michael Jordan was born in 1963, by the way.
Yeah, that was the other first-round matchups. You're going to have Morningside. They've been number one all season. They will play Dickinson State. Dickinson State was ranked 18th. The new poll has not been released. Not that I can find, but these are first-round matchups. Kansas Wesleyan, they were third in the polls. They're going to face Baker. Baker of Kansas, they were the 15th seed. You're going to also have, let's see, Grandview, the Vikings of Grandview. They're in Iowa. They will play Concordia University. That is in Michigan. Concordia was the 12th ranked last previous week. Grandview was 4. 5 seed is going to be the College of Idaho. They will play Ottawa, not Canada, but Ottawa of Arizona. And they were 16th. Again, the final polls have not been released. Kaiser of Florida will be hosting the Cumberlands, University of the Cumberlands. That's the team that put up the 98-0, as Leon mentioned, against Union College. And your final one is Lindsey Wilson. They will take on St. Francis. That'll be a home game for the Blue Raiders. St. Francis of Indiana. This St. Francis, a team that has won multiple championships. Now, Marion, again, they are 10th in the nation in total offense, 2nd in total defense. Reinhardt is 4th in total defense. Their quarterback, Ethan Darter, has a 59.4% completion percentage. He's thrown 14 touchdowns against 2 interceptions. And their leading running back for Marion is Charles Salary, 1,240 yards, 13 touchdowns, definitely earning his salary for Marion. And finally, their linebacker, Nikai Poizier, he's got 12.5 tackles for a loss, 1.5 sacks, and 1 interception. So that is the football first round of the NAIA playoffs. Marion of Indiana will be Reinhardt's opponent in that first round, and I assume it's going to be in Marion, Indiana, which is which is located. Let's see if I can find it here, because there's a lot of Marion in Marion University, Indiana. Okay, I think this is it. Yeah, Marion of Indiana is located in it's north of Indianapolis. North of Indianapolis.
Oh, wow.
That is where Marion is. Oh, I can go hang with Rob Brown. So that is where Reinhardt will be playing in their first round. It's a 7-hour and 31-minute drive from the Metro Atlanta area. And we'll see. So that is it. So that is Reinhardt's team that they will be playing in the first round of the NAIA playoff tournament. So, all right. So now we'll see if when Coach Miller is ready to call us and talk about that first round matchup and what he's feeling about his team. And I guess now we can talk about that game last night. Leon, we were there, we saw it, And interesting that Reinhart piled up about 480 yards of total offense, didn't quite get to the 500. But the key stat that really jumped out at me is the defense holding Union to 80 yards of offense.
Oh, yeah, it was a complete demolition. I mean, dismantling.
Right. We listed all the D words on the way home, didn't we?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we did.
What really the play of the game that really impressed me was the play action that we seen out of Billy Hall to what was that? Billy Hall.
Matthew Hall
to Navarre Solomon.
Right. The guy he used was it Mario Black? Was that the person you're thinking of?
I'm talking about the 60-yard completion for the touchdown.
Right.
I mean that spiral that he threw.
Yeah.
From Hall to Solomon.
That was Hall to Solomon. Yes. Right. And I mean it caught Union completely off guard. You know the cornerback, the opposing cornerback who just got toasted. I mean he made Navarre Solomon like Randy Moss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was impressed with that. I was impressed on the way that I'm really impressed with Reinhardt's ability to stay humble.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's easy, you know, the way they completely dismantle teams, it's easy to come in with this attitude of, you know, we're pretty much going to come in with the Floyd Mayweather attitude.
Right.
Completely confident. Floyd has every reason to be confident, but completely prepared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because that's how you could tell the good teams from the okay teams. Because when I look at a good team is a team that comes out and performs well against inferior competition. And the okay teams are the teams that will play down or up to the level of competition. And when talking to Coach Miller, we noticed that, you know, because I was sitting there, you know, hey, Coach, you know, I'm pretty sure it's going to be over under 40 today. He's all, well, I know that my guys are prepared. You know, the real humble attitude. And I could definitely see, based on the results, that Reinhart, you know, comes in with the humble attitude. And that's the attitude that you need to go into the playoffs. Because they will be playing against the number 2 seed. And I'm hoping they don't think it as, oh, they're going to play against the number 2 seed undefeated. No, they're thinking that's an opportunity to make an example out these guys and move forward.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about that play to Solomon. What set that up was the first play in the drive, the rush to McCall Lanier. He went left side, got a couple of yards. Then they set up the exact same formation, and Union was expecting the exact same play. Now, I think a good teams will think that, okay, maybe something different is going to come at us, like they're setting us up for something. But Union definitely fell into the trap, and boy, what a pretty ball that Billy Hall delivered right in the hands of Navarre Solomon. He had to climb the ladder a bit for it, but it was put in a place that only he could get. And of course, you want to contrast this with Dalton Edwards, who was playing his first game as a quarterback and played all year as QB for Union. The thing with him is that his passes were very, very softly thrown. They had no zip on them. There was only one pass the entire day that he had a zip to it.
Yep.
And we were saying that, you know, it was just an interception waiting to happen, and Bryce Ford picked it off. And Ford had a pretty good game because, you know, he was getting abused by TJ Pass.
Oh, yeah.
TJ Pass had an offensive pass interference call, and then Ford got him back on the very next play. And then, sure enough, a very softly thrown ball. Ford was able to get underneath the coverage of Pass and make the pick. But, yeah, a very, very good game for Reinhart, especially playing a team that we knew was vastly, vastly inferior to the Eagles. They had been holding their own against some of the other teams, but, boy, they had not played anybody like Reinhart, and Union certainly did it. And Reinhart with 9 touchdowns, 8 through the 8 on the ground, almost a punt return for a touchdown, almost a fumble return for a touchdown, but still. And also Reinhart uses the first time I've ever seen the fridge formation with Trey Coney, the all NAIA preseason right tackle, going in from half a yard out, and yeah, he was just not going to be stopped in terms of that.
Yep. I noticed that during the game when discussing the balls that lack velocity,
mm-hmm.
you actually predicted right before the interception that, hey, he's going to throw an interception. And lo and behold, within seconds, pick six.
Well, Tony Romo's got nothing on me. But like I said, you just see it coming. You knew absolutely. It was coming. It was absolutely just the way he was doing it. And it's just a matter of, again, we don't know what happened to the other three quarterbacks. We don't know if there was any injury situations. Should have talked it over with some of the union coaches. They were up on the top of the press box with us, although I don't think they might have been in the good mood for us to ask those questions, to answer those questions. They could not couldn't stop Reinhardt, and our Reinhardt defense definitely up to the task of that one. But as Leon said, you know, the Eagles have a chance to make a statement. I know we were all thinking that maybe Lindsey Wilson would we would draw Lindsey Wilson simply because they were closer, and but no, Blue Raiders are going to have St. Francis to deal with, and I'm going to be also interested to see that Cumberland's Kaiser game. And Kaiser was also floated as a destination, and that's pretty much why I realized we weren't going to go to either one of those places, simply because that those were suggested as possibilities. The NAIA likes to keep teams at least somewhat geographically close. That's why you've got Baker against Kansas Wesleyan. Those two teams share Kansas as a home. Concordia, Michigan against Grand View of Iowa. That's not the biggest trip. College of Idaho against we'll receive a visit from Ottawa University of Arizona. Dickinson State, North Dakota against Morningside in Iowa. And Northwestern of Iowa going to St. Xavier of Illinois going to Northwestern of Iowa. Out of all that, I think the longest trip is going to be Cumberland's of Kentucky going down to West Palm Beach to play Kaiser. I think that's the longest trip of the entire first round. So it'll be interesting to see how that breaks down. Of course, we're waiting on Coach Miller to give us a buzz. I've already texted him. So hopefully he will be joining us in a matter of moments. Of course, he's sitting down with his coaches right now to figure out what he wants to do, how they're going to approach scouting, how they're going to approach getting film, and just getting his team ready. And Reinhardt's administration is busy figuring out how they're going to make the jaunt all the way up to Indianapolis. I believe Reinhardt, this will be Reinhardt's second trip into the Hoosier State. Their very first playoff appearance was up at St. Francis about 3 years ago, I want to say. Four years ago. That was when the game started out raining, then switched over to snow in the middle of it, and it made for just sloppy field conditions, as the Eagles had all sorts of problems with that. I'm John Morgo here. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton, talking a little NAIA college football. And what I want to do right now is talk some more college football. This time I want to talk about the Georgia-Auburn game, where Georgia wrapped up the SEC East, and there was two things going on in the SEC yesterday, two big news. One is the Georgia winning the SEC East formally. They will face LSU for all practical purposes. And Tua Tagovailoa, he is done for the year. A gruesome hip injury. And Daniel, I'm going to send this to you. What does this does this do to Tua's draft prospects?
It definitely hurts him, John and Leon. First off, my heart and prayers go out to him. I want y'all to kind of think back for a minute. When we were in the car yesterday coming back from Reinhardt, right?
Yep.
And you turned the radio on, John, mm-hmm. in your car. And I don't know what station you had it on. I don't know if it was 92.9 a game or whatever it was.
It was the It was the WSB FM, because we were listening to the Georgia game.
Yeah, you were listening to the Georgia game. So I guess they were on some sort of break, rather. And I thought that I heard one of the announcers, I don't know who he was or whatnot, but I thought I heard Bo Jackson and Tua Tagovailoa's injury. I thought I heard those two words and names in the same breath.
Yeah.
So whenever you hear, and for those young people who don't know about Bo Jackson and his hip injury. Of course, that ended his professional football career. The same kind of like injury. It was a dislocated hip. Of course, his looked a little bit more gruesome than Tua's did. Tua looked like he just went down and it was kind of basic. Uh-huh. But you have to slow it down to see what actually happened. His leg did get tangled up there. This right here, it's a huge question mark, guys, because he does have another year of eligibility left, and he was expected to come out this year before the injury. So it's almost like, what do you do now? Do you medically redshirt and hope you can get a fifth year out of this? Do you go ahead and go to the league, knowing that the league is probably going to look at you and say, you're really a fourth rounder now. You know, I mean, the league can be that way, you know, and you hate to say that. But this was just a tough break for him, man. And he was basically in the Heisman race, even though I think that Joe Burrow's kind of eliminated him last weekend.
Right.
But, you know, they were still in the mix to kind of get to the playoffs. I don't know how far they're going to go now. And this was tough, man. This was tough to hear about because he's one of the good kids in college football. And for him to go down the way he did. Now, back to the whole Bo Jackson and hip surgery and hip injury analogy. Remember, that was back in 1991 or 92 when Bo Jackson hurt his
It was 1991 right? versus the Bengals. Okay.
1991, right?
Yeah, they played
against the Bengals. So, yes. So, ironically, the Bengals and the Raiders are playing today.
Exactly.
So that was 28 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So what I'm saying is that the medical field and technology has advanced so much since 1991 that this kid could come back in a year. You know, and so I don't want to say that his career is over. I don't want to say he's going to miss a long period of time. We don't really know just yet, but as far as his draft stock go, this is a huge question mark for me. And he's set to have surgery tomorrow morning. So we'll see how that goes. He'll be in I can't remember what he said he was going to be. I think he's going to be in Alabama
right.
having surgery in the morning. So, you know, I just don't know where he would go. I think it all depends on his healing process and how this thing would go with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of surgeries, there's another quarterback that's going under the knife, Cam Newton. And with the 29-3 dismantling that the Falcons have put on the Carolina Panthers, and it's not going to get any easier for Carolina this year.
No, it isn't.
At all. You know, we don't get paid millions of dollars to do this, but it's been discussion all year. If you're Carolina right now and you see the direction that your team is trending, granted, you have an MVP candidate and a potential record-setting running back in Christian McCaffrey. He's like what seems to be the lone bright spot on offense over the last 2 weeks.
Right.
Should we still be, you know, within the school of thought that, you know, that Cam Newton, you know, maybe he see his way to Chicago, potentially to the Chargers, you know, for this new look, better weather, better uniform NFL team. You know, I would like Cam to see. I like him in the powder blue throwing balls for my team.
Right.
But if you're Carolina and you see the way that your rookie quarterback is trending, I mean, we're talking about 4 interceptions today. And proverbial, I mean, I text Daniel during the game. I believe it was in the group text. We all have seen it. But right. It looked to be a blowout mm-hmm. in the first quarter. And I believe this is like maybe like the second blowout in 3 weeks.
Yep.
Your Carolina's coaching staff, what are you thinking about right now?
Well, if I'm Ron Rivers, I'm thinking about getting my resume burnished.
Uh-oh.
Because, you know, Cam is showing him, I guess, between his wardrobe choices. I think I made the comment a couple shows ago that someone was mentioning that he's starting to look like dressing like villains from Batman. Between that, his injury situation, how Kyle Allen before this game seemed to be giving Carolina a steady hand, but now it's almost like the bottom is threatening to drop out of him. You know, maybe Carolina's going to have to clean house. And you mentioned about Cam Newton going to the Chargers. Well, the other big news in the NFL occurred right here in our hometown. And, boy, was this an interesting soap opera in and of itself. Colin Kaepernick made his long gestating appearance in a workout. It was supposed to be held at Flowery Branch. Cam and his handlers and the NFL got into an argument about how it was going to be covered, how it was going to get filmed, whether or not Colin would agree to sign a waiver that says he would sue the NFL if no offers came out of it. And eventually, Cap showed up at a high school field down in Riverdale, Drew High School, Charles Drew High School.
Drew High School.
And started to throw there, looked really good. There were about 8 to 10 confirmed team representatives there. I think Kansas City was one of them, a couple others. And he threw there, showed a lot of velocity on his deep ball, proved he hasn't lost it. And the question is this going to be enough for him to get a job offer? Because the name Colin Kaepernick, even though it's been 3 years, it's still very radioactive in terms of he's going to get a response no matter what he does, simply because of the incredibly public nature in which he did it and how forces arose against him just because they thought that he was challenging the status quo, which in some aspects he was. But basically, Colin, as I've said, you know, he was telling people things they don't want to hear. And people really don't want to hear things they don't want to hear. And Colin is still getting the backlash for that. And the question is, I mean, quarterbacks have been going down left and right. They're still going down. I think everyone is in agreement that what he showed is enough to get him a job. He should get a job. The only question right now is, will he and will a squad take that chance? I would argue that the Chargers would be a good place for him simply because it's L.A., although he is only, what, 2 or 3 years younger than Phillip Rivers? If you're going to groom someone for Phillip Rivers' replacement, Kaepernick is not the person you want. Cam Newton, I think Cam is a little bit in the middle of that. I think if you're grooming a replacement for Phillip Rivers, you need someone either in his mid-20s or early 20s. How old is Cam?
Cam is 31. Him and Colin Kaepernick about the same age. Colin Kaepernick and Cam Newton about the same age.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Cam might be about 30 or 31 years
okay.
old.
Okay. All right. So Cam's younger than I thought. Okay, that makes sense. So that changes my viewpoint a little bit. But again, if I'm San Diego, I want or LA, if I'm the Chargers, I want to go with a quarterback who is at least a decade younger than Phillip Rivers, if indeed you are reaching the point where we're figuring out how to handle Phillip Rivers' exit, because you know the exit's coming. It's just a matter of whether it's going to be this year, whether it's going to be next year, whether or not Phillip Rivers can prove to the brass that he's got some years left in the tank. And of course, part of it's going to depend on how he performs the remnants of this season, which right now it looks like if anyone's going to charge at the Chiefs, it's not going to be the Chargers. It's going to be the Raiders. They're 5-4 right now, and they've got a very winnable game coming up next week against the Jets.
Yeah, the Raiders are on the way to being 6-4.
Yeah, they're beating up. They're beating up on the Bungles,
and they'll be 7-4 after they beat the Jets.
Right.
I mean, it's football any given Sunday, but in all likelihood, you know.
Yeah. The only problem with the Raiders is they wrap up their schedule when they do. When they do their return leg through the division, they're going to have to go all road games. They got to go at L.A., at Kansas City, at Denver. And that's going to be their only two home games left are against Jacksonville and Tennessee.
Yeah.
So Raiders could conceivably go 9-7. Maybe they'll steal a game on the road, go 10-6, which might be enough to get them a wild card berth. Probably not enough to get them the division. More than likely a wild card.
Yeah. But in reference,
well, they're still in reach for that divisional title, right? Because of Kansas City and Kansas City's inability to just put teams away. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that Chargers Chiefs matchup is actually bigger than what most people wanna think it is, because that right there could tell the story. If Kansas City loses, Oakland could possibly be in striking distance. And, I mean, they could be a legitimate threat to win the division. If the Chargers lose, the Chargers could be on their way possibly out of the playoff picture. And especially in a very tough AFC, in a very battle-tested AFC, I mean, I don't know.
Oh, it's looking ugly right now. You know, we're between teams like our the Chargers, the Falcons, the Browns. You know, a lot of the playoffs start last week for a lot of teams. You know, one loss can just end your will just end your chances of competing for a title.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but in reference to Colin Kaepernick, I don't want to see him in Kansas City. I don't want to see him in Seattle. I don't want to see him in Houston. I don't want to see him, you know, pretty much playing behind a quarterback where he will not get a chance to play. I want to see this man play. He's proven to be better. He's better than a lot of the quarterbacks playing right now. I mean, you got – and, you know, he's, granted, okay, he pretty much held America accountable for their actions, which there shouldn't be nothing wrong with that. But we got to look at his players like Richie Incognito, who, as we remember, in 2014, went on record dropping numerous N-bombs. And I mean record, I mean text message Jonathan Martin showed. This man's career did not skip a beat. He was promptly hired by Buffalo. He is currently playing for Raiders. No one bats an eye. Colin Kaepernick did nothing but kneel. He didn't curse the American flag. He just kneeled in protest to murder. Now, granted, I could sing to the cows come home how harmless that is. But unfortunately, you have a very large segment of America that does not see it that way. And this segment of America are your season ticket holders. A lot of them are your owners. So, he should he come back to the league? I believe he should. Will he? You know, and let's not get it confused. The NFL is not doing this out of kindness or own heart.
Well, the NFL is doing this to avoid a lawsuit.
That part. So, we looked ourselves in the mirror and amongst numerous soul searchers. Oh, nothing there.
The NFL said, hey. We did our part. They're basically washing their hands of the whole thing. We did our part. You know, we can't force a team at gunpoint to sign him. All we can do is give him an outlet, a forum to display his talents. They've done that. And as far as the NFL is concerned, their responsibilities have been met. And that's absolutely true.
Now this is the question, John. I wonder what are the numbers. You know, he has a shoe.
That's Nike. Yeah, Nike. Nike's kind of getting – but Nike is so big that they can survive this.
Nike is also in bed with the NFL.
Right.
Are they not? Yes, they are.
Okay. Yeah.
So, therefore, Nike being in bed with the NFL, Colin Kaepernick is still somewhat connected to the NFL. He's still getting a steady paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, who knows what type of – backdoor handshakes were made. Like, hey, man, you go off and drop this lawsuit that you will win. He's going to win that.
Right.
He has the evidence. Hey, we'll go off and let you back in the league. So, you know, it's like it's leverage. And he's leveraging his power with, you know, whatever little power he may have, he may possess, but he has leverage.
Mm-hmm.
He's leveraging his way back to the NFL. Now, will this be a long career? NFL, we're talking about five, because he's in his 30s now. He's like in the early 30s. We're talking about 5 to 7 more years in NFL. We're talking about 1 to 2 more years in NFL. We're going to put him in and get him out. Cup of coffee, as you say.
Well, I think Chicago would be a very good landing spot for him. I think he'd do a good – I think, you know, the Bears are completely lost faith in Mitch Trubisky. I think the Bears would be a great place for him. Chicago is a liberal city.
Tennessee. I mean, that's not a liberal state, but Tennessee does need him.
Yeah, Tennessee could use him too. But, you know, they're winning. Well, they're sort of winning with Marcus Mariota. But Tennessee is a very much a red state. He wouldn't do too well in terms of Tennessee. I think Chicago, very, very palatable to him. But like we said, the NFL cannot force a team to sign him. All they can do is give him a font to showcase his talents. They've done so. We've seen the video. The video's gotten out. Any team with a – and that's the thing, guys. There's no such thing anymore in terms of teams not getting video. You can get video of anything if you want to and if you're willing to work at it.
Yeah.
Video is basically jumping in in your lap. Gone are the days where playoff coaches will meet at the Waffle House and exchange videotapes. You know, that's gone. It's just a bygone relic. So, like I said, Colin has the NFL's done what they needed to do. They feel their responsibilities have been met. They want Colin to basically write off on that, not sue them for it. And it's just a matter of what will happen in the next couple weeks. And so that's kind of that whole situation. But I want to talk about, again, we kind of glossed over this when we were talking. Oh, by the way, the 10-day forecast, this is a 8-day forecast out for Indianapolis next Saturday. This is where Reinhardt was playing. Again, this is a very, very early forecast, courtesy of our friends at weather.com. AM rain switching over to snow with a 40% chance of precipitation. So there you go. But again, that is a very, very early forecast for Indianapolis. Go, Daniel.
Here's the thing about that, and for Reinhardt, in some instances, that kind of works in their favor. They run the football. They beat you in the trenches. They can sometimes get you on the outside when you have Mosley and Odom and those boys running on the outside. When you got Trevae Kane and Lanier running up the gut, that's where they can hurt you at. So, and Reinhardt's defensive front seven has been playing so well lately that they can also get to that quarterback, to Marion's quarterback. So this could possibly fall into their favor. Of course, they don't see that kind of weather. They haven't really seen that kind of weather all year. So, you know, they've seen the rainy part of it. Of course, we've seen two of those games get, you know, weather delay.
Unless we get thunder snow, that's not going to happen there.
Yeah, and that's not going to happen. So, it's been a bit interesting. Now, they haven't gotten snow yet, so... And you're still in the state of Georgia. You're not going to get snow probably until December.
Right.
But, yeah, Indiana snow is a different snow.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, yeah. So, I mean, they have the offense for it. I can honestly say that. As far as the wing T and running it up the gut, they have the mental capacity. They have the toughness for it. I think this is one of the more dangerous teams to play against because they haven't lost since Kennesaw.
Right.
And Kennesaw is an FCS opponent. So, you know, they've been tested a bit, so they know about big games like this, and they can go on the road and get a game like this.
All right, so I want to talk, we kind of glossed over this. I want to talk a little bit about Georgia's victory over Auburn yesterday. Bulldogs got raced out to a huge lead. Auburn came back, made it close, but then Georgia held on. They have two games left, Texas A&M and Georgia Tech. Pretty much their route to the Georgia Mercedes-Benz play LSU, that has been set. And, of course, we want to extend our prayers to Chamberlain Smith. She was the Georgia photographer who basically got steamrolled at the end of the first half yesterday, sent to the hospital, knocked completely out, a freelance photographer, an intern photographer out of Ringgold, Georgia. She's okay. She's talking in the hospital. She was talking. She's fine. So, but again, that was definitely a scary moment for the young intern. Again, when you are taking photos, you're looking through a lens. You really can't see what's going on. That's probably why she got so surprised. And again, just got barreled into by a football player and basically knocked unconscious.
The question is, will she continue her duties as a photographer, or she's going to find another
I think she's going to find something else to do in the Georgia Athletic Department. That's kind of my gut, but, man, that was just a
– I mean, but what if we see her out there again, though? I mean, my goodness, what if she takes it in and she takes it in the kisser and, like, hey, this is what I signed up for?
Mm-hmm.
And she goes off and she's out there again in 2 weeks.
Probably won't see her against Texas A&M. Maybe we'll see her down at Bobby Dodd when the Bulldogs play at Georgia Tech to end the year. And the big question about this Auburn game, fellas, is Georgia's defense. They allowed Auburn to kind of come back in this one.
Yeah, but they did. But granted, they did. But they kept the game. Mm-hmm. It was a respectable score at the end of the game. I mean, what Auburn scored 14 points? Or was it 20? What was it? They scored 21 points, Auburn did?
It was four. The final score was 21-14.
There it is.
Yeah, 21-14.
If I'm Georgia, giving up just two touchdowns, granted it was never a good time for them to allow those touchdowns, especially in light of pitching a shutout in the first half. Mm-hmm. But the score was pretty low. I like the way Georgia came in, and I mean they came. I mean you can't get any more hostile than Auburn Stadium. Right. That was hostile.
Oh yes.
I mean, they showed a camera shot of the lone Georgia fan sitting there with a major frown on his face as Auburn was moving the chains. I mean, my goodness! But for Georgia to come in and set such a huge statement in the wake of that LSU game, that's what you want to see. I want to see my defense give up just 14, even though it was at the wrong time. But they only gave up two touchdowns. They kept it very pedestrian, and they got out there with the victory.
Question that bothers me a little bit is the fact that, and I think this has been a complaint most of the Jake Fromm era, is how come Georgia can't seem to really put their foot on an opponent's throat and just press?
Well, yeah, you know, I was going to say something about that, John, because if they're going to play LSU in the SEC championship, and we all know what LSU can bring to the table. They just put up 59 points on Ole Miss.
Right.
So this was Saturday night. So you cannot go into to Mercedes-Benz Stadium here in Atlanta, where the SEC championship will be, think that you're going to beat LSU like that.
Right.
Because LSU is going to score some points. They're going to score points. From I think, completed 20 out of 28 passes. But they were only for 110 yards.
Right.
And he had three touchdowns. Yeah, you know, he got his touchdowns in the red zone. All of them were in the red zone. So, you know, he did good as a game manager. But he's going to have to really gun it, man. I mean, his defense is going to have to step up. I think his defense will play well enough. But I still think Joe Burrow and LSU are still going to put some points up.
Yeah, that really is what Jake Fromm is known for. He's a manager. He can manage a game extremely well.
Yeah,
it's just the razzle dazzle, the things we want our quarterback to do that he's been a little bit recalcitrant with.
I think Daniel's being honest.
Yeah, he is.
You know, we're looking at Jake Fromm's numbers for 13 for 20 for 110 yards against LSU. Is not going to get it done.
Yeah,
and you know, unfortunately, you know, Jake Fromm only has one victory in which he threw the ball for over 30 yards. This game, I mean, this year, and that was actually last week,
right?
And
I think you threw exactly 30.
Yeah,
if my memory's right.
And they came out with a rare victory.
Mm-hmm.
We're going, you know, Jake Fromm is going. It's going to be a shootout with LSU, and you know, we're talking about Joe Burrow is coming out. He's coming out with automatics, heavy artillery, and Jake Fromm is going to prepare to hold serve against that.
Right.
Let's be honest. You know, the defense may show up. The defense, you know, against that type of attack. I mean, the Georgia defense has been proven to show up. But at the same time, we're looking at Auburn quarterback that he threw 30 for 50 with just a 23.7 QBR and 245 yards. Joe Burrow is a whole nother animal. That's a whole – we're talking about potentially the number one draft pick and Heisman Trophy winner and threatening to be national champion.
Right.
This year, we're going to need Georgia to show up. Especially if he's going to be at home, we're going to need Jake Fromm to really show up. I hope he's back there getting his exercises right. We have to be thinking QBR has to be at least 90 going against LSU.
And that basically is looking like a knockout game for the college football playoff.
Oh, yeah, indeed. Indeed. Yeah. Whoever wins that game is in. Who
right.
loses is out. Because if Georgia being ranked number four knocks down LSU, they're out. They're out. And if Georgia loses, you already know Alabama's going to be in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got other teams. It looks like Ohio State, they're in if they can win the Big Ten title. They're definitely in. Of course, Clemson, they may not be in right now. Clemson's number four. They're hanging on to number four. They'll definitely be in. And then you just got that the Georgia LSU. And, of course, in the college football playoffs, they're both – as is said right now, they're both in. But I think that is definitely going to change. And, you know, Joe Burrow, I know, Daniel, we were talking about this yesterday. Joe Burrow is a senior because he's got that transfer.
Okay.
Because he got that transfer from Ohio State. This is his, I think this might be his second year or first year as LSU's quarterback because he did sit out that year.
LSU's quarterback.
Yeah, because he did transfer it out in 2017.
You know what's interesting?
What?
For it, the third straight week, next week, okay? Mm-hmm. So let's take you back to last week where Joe Burrow had his Heisman moment on the road, 46 points against Alabama. Right. Last night, Jalen Hurts pulled off the comeback, probably the greatest comeback in Oklahoma history, mm-hmm. knocks off Baylor on the road.
Yep.
Next Saturday, noon, it's Justin Fields' turn. Can he pull off a time game on national spotlight where College Game Day will be?
Right.
Where he plays Penn State.
Yep.
So you got the top three Heisman finalists in my eyes right now at 1-3. Justin Fields, it is your turn. Now it's Justin Fields' turn to step on that big stage. Now, granted, the game will be at noon mm-hmm. because Fox has the game, but it's still a big-time game. It's going to be a game that everybody's going to be tuned in to watch. Game day will be there, like I said.
Yep.
And now it's his turn. And now he gets a shot at a potential Heisman moment. I think that's interesting. I think that's just really interesting that for three consecutive weeks, we're going to talk about these three quarterbacks in Hurts and Burrow and now Justin Fields on big-time stages against top opponents.
Yes, it is. I'm John Morgo with Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. It's about time we wrap things up. So just Coach Miller, again, he was due to call in, but I think he's huddling down with his assistants, trying to figure out how he's going to – what plan of attack he's going to have against Marion, Indiana in the first round of the NAIA playoffs. Again, the second seed of the tournament. That'll be next week in Indianapolis. Game time to be determined a little bit later. As of right now, I'll be taking a trip up to the Hoosier Town to call that game, but things might change, and we'll be sure to let you know. We got just a few minutes for things you may not be aware of. I want to express my condolences to one of our first guests on this show, Tommy Palmer, the Dean of Georgia High School Football Reporting, host of the Georgia High School Scoreboard Show. He recently lost his daughter to cancer, and he did not have a show last week because of that. So for all of us, and I'm sure I speak for every single member of the Georgia High School football community, because we've all had interactions with Mr. Palmer. He's a class guy, and he knows everything about the sport. I just want to wish him our thoughts and prayers as he goes through this very tough time. He's not alone. And, guys, cancer sucks. I'm just going to put it right there.
Yeah.
Just going to put that right out there.
It does.
Right out there and give Mr. Palmer all of our condolences. We hope to see him back at Georgia State Stadium in four weeks for the state football championship to be held over there at the new Georgia State Stadium. So who wants to go next?
I got next.
All right.
I'd like to go off and spend a little time, you know, looking at Mr. Christian McCaffrey. We're talking about the running back for the Carolina Panthers, who joined Jim Brown and Matt Forte as being the only players in NFL history to have to record 150 scrimmage yards in six of the first eight games in the league. That is ridiculous for Christian McCaffrey.
And he had that today in the loss.
Yes. To burst.
Yeah, he did. He did.
We have Mr. McCaffrey who burst on the scene. And he has two brothers, and I believe that are playing D1 football, who are on their way to the league as well, too. Mm-hmm. But for this man to burst on the scene, I mean, I wouldn't say out of nowhere, because he did have a 1,000-yard season last year. But right. Unfortunately, his progress is overshadowed by the Carolina's collective lack of progress.
Uh-huh.
But this year, kind of like with the same thing looming, this young man, if his team were actually winning, would be MVP candidate.
Yeah.
You know, and we're looking, you know, we're looking at great teams to come, because, you know, when we think of the running backs this year, we thought of the Ezekiel Elliott and his big contract to receive.
But the story of the year amongst running backs, so to speak, is Christian McCaffrey. So I like to take my hats off to this man who is shining in light of the negative shadow that's looming over his organization with the seemingly uncertainty at the coaching position and quarterback position. Yeah. For Christian McCaffrey to hold serve like he is very commendable. So once again, two thumbs up and kudos to Christian McCaffrey.
All right, Daniel.
All right. Yeah, I'm coming up. And John, you're right. Cancer does suck. Yeah. You know, my condolences going to Tommy Palmer and his family as they go through this difficult time. But I actually want to give a hashtag salute to somebody. This guy's name is, and I butcher his name, I'm sorry, is Durav Guar. So why am I giving him the hashtag salute? Because everybody knows that the game show Jeopardy has been just been something, you know, in our household.
Right.
Okay, I grew up loving and watching the great Alex Trebek. So there was an episode this past Monday, and actually this past week, it was actually Alex Trebek's final tape, and of course, he's battling through stage 4 pancreatic cancer. So he got choked up a bit when he read his final response. And Durav Guar is a Brown University student. He's actually from Riverdale, Georgia, actually.
Right.
He actually wanted to show his support as Alex goes through the pancreatic cancer treatment. And, of course, you have the final Jeopardy, you know, category. I'm not sure what the category was or the answer or what the question or what the answer was, but he responded on purpose. He responded purposely wrong, and he responded with the phrase, "We love you, Alex," and substituted a heart in place of the word love. So there's been like a big time hashtag, and I think it's across Twitter and Instagram, hashtag We Love You, Alex. And for me and from everybody in America, Alex Trebek, he's right. We love you. And keep fighting, my friend. Exactly. Keep fighting.
Yeah, I saw that at work, and I noticed that. And Alex got choked up. You could tell because he kind of misses a beat.
He did
when he read the answer, the incorrect question to the
right. He did
to that. Yeah, I've taken the Jeopardy test many times. One time I tried taking it while I was calling a softball game at Alabama. It was kind of like a very interesting juxtaposition. Ground ball to short. Barber picks it up. What is chlorophyll? On to first, and then we get the out. So, yeah, that was kind of an interesting little broadcast there. All right, that's going to wrap us up here on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Again, I will be more than likely on my way up to Indianapolis next week for the Reinhardt-Marion, Indiana game. Going to be my first time in that city, so it should be an interesting time. Hopefully we'll be back in time on Sunday to discuss, hopefully, a Reinhardt victory. Want to thank all of you for listening. Check us out here. If you got any questions, hit us up. John_Morgo on Twitter. We'll be introducing a Facebook and a YouTube page very soon. Hopefully we'll get that going in a couple of weeks. Tell a friend, tell an enemy about The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. We will be with you hopefully next week to discuss that and many other sports topics, latest in football, latest in college football, college basketball, and the NBA. A whole smorgasbord of topics coming at you next week. Hope you can join us for that one. We are out. And again, you folks have a good night, and we will see you in a couple of weeks. Again, we are The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast right here on your wherever you go to get your podcasts.